As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing!
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass!
Roberto Di Zerbi hits the ground running with a low-risk press conference classic. Just where would you place a proverbial price tag on a player's body? Some genuinely not made-up marketing speak for the New England shirts. Second-tier landline shaming. The collective noun for injuries. Jamie Oliver goes full Andy Townsend. And the forgettable, weird, chaotic web that is the What Are You Doing Here 11. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 193 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me are the unchanged pairing. The first time in Football Clichés history that they've been together with me, four episodes in a row, unbroken. It's Charlie Eccleshare and David, 80th appearance Walker. How's it going?
Yes, going well.
I'm pleased with that, 80 appearances. That's a nice landmark.
80 gets you in the like real royalty of England caps, I think. Yeah. No schmucks are getting to 80. A two-pronged affair for you and the listeners today. We'll have a little brief adjudication panel with some lovely stuff in it. And then we will move swiftly on to the What Are You Doing Here 11. The mechanics of which are very precise, not as loose as some people might think, so we'll get onto that. But let's kick off things with the adjudication panel. First of all, Robert Dugmore, who was on duty for the Premier League 2 clash between Brighton under-21s and their Everton... what's the word I'm thinking of?
Counterparts,
thank you. We pick up the action, ooh, in and around the 60th minute.
This now is Cannon. There's plenty of space ahead of him. Will it be a case of cometh the hour, cometh the man for here? Plenty of attempts for the Ireland under 20 today. Maybe not Cannon, though. It's fed into Stanley Mills, who tucks it away low past James Beadle.
Charlie, I don't think I've ever seen a more deliberate telegraphed attempt to get on the Football Clichés podcast than this.
Yeah, you can't set up a will this be a... I mean, I suppose sometimes they do, whether it's an obvious someone's coming on. But in the, I don't think in that sort of context it's acceptable.
Interesting that Charlie objects to it on those grounds, Dave. Are you having it for an assist?
Was it in actual fact a case of cometh the hour, cometh the other man?
Yeah, but he didn't know he was going to do... He didn't say it based on the assist. He said it just... preemptively.
That's that's what you risk.
I think you could have it on an assist if it was one of those assists.
No, come on, Charlie.
If it was an assist like Luis Suarez,
they did all the work.
Like Luis Suarez in that Coit hat trick from 2 yards each game against United.
Of course.
Where Suarez on one of them beat about five players, set it up, and everyone even congratulated him. If he'd come off the bench and,
but how would
and done
that, how would that sound? How would you say that? And it's a case of come off the hour, come off the man for Luis Suarez with that assist there. Like,
no, I'm not having it either, I have to say. I think it's amazing how we all slip up on this concept at some point.
I think the camera pans to him. He's lying there taking all the plaudits. And you know who is meant by saying it. He's there, just it's so clearly his goal in all but name. It would be
maybe
an extreme situation, don't get me wrong, but I think it's possible.
Maybe as they're sort of trotting back to the halfway line after the goal has been sort of absorbed, then maybe.
And he's the one who's sort of pointing up and, you know, looking at the heavens as if it's his goal.
Mm. Okay, well, maybe the Premier League 2 level isn't the arena for this sort of thing. Let's move on. Roberto Di Zerbi unveiled as Brighton's new manager in his first press conference. And now, whatever Graeme Souness's doubts about De Zerbi's ability to adapt to our league, some press conference quips are just universal.
Have you spoke to Pep in the last 48 hours since your appointment?
Sunday evening, yes.
What did he say?
È contento che sono venuto.
He's very happy that I'm on board here.
Mi ha parlato molto bene del club.
He told me very good about the club.
E mi ha detto che è sempre pronto ad aiutarmi.
Here we go.
Qualora avessi bisogno.
And he told me that if I need, he will be very happy to help me.
Tranne nella partita che andremo a giocare contro di loro.
Of course, not in the match we are playing with against them.
Honestly, if you cannot arrange, Dave, for a mobile phone to go off in your press conference, at least line up the idea that someone doesn't want you to succeed against their team, at least. It's perfect. It's the best English press conference fodder you can imagine.
It's the universal language of football, yeah.
Yeah.
It was nicely set up by the break as well, giving it even more of a kind of budum, the sort of translation equivalent of a budum to sort of...
It's just perfect. Yeah. I mean, it's factually based. Of course it is. It's a very good joke. No problem with that. Essentially straightforward one here from Buenpondo, Dave, who says, Jack Grealish has said, when I have a price tag on my head, people are going to talk. Surely, Buenpondo says, a price tag is worn around your neck. Please help. I don't think this has ever really been heavily implied in price tag chat. Price tags just get slapped on players. But where do they get slapped?
Well, if it's being slapped... then it could be on the head, because if it's like a sticker, but if it's a tag, then it's got to hang from somewhere. So the neck is more appropriate. You have a bounty on your head,
exactly,
and a target on your back,
yeah,
which is a not dissimilar thing, because he's a marked man, isn't he? Partly because of that.
I think sort of loosely tied around the neck, so it dangles down the front or back, would make sense.
Hmm. Or like from the sleeve, actually.
Or maybe on the arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of around the wrist.
I think you do imagine it. It depends if you're thinking it as like clothes. Because if you are, as I am, then I think that most naturally would go on the back, sort of where I'm holding here.
You turn it around.
But then you wouldn't see it if those clothes were being worn. Mm. You know, it's like if you leave the price tag on a jacket, it's just in there.
But it's not a sticker, so it's definitely not. It's not stuck. Despite being slapped, it isn't stuck. It is still a tag.
No,
it's very confused.
You'd only slap it on if it was like a half price sale or something.
Is it reduced? A yellow
really
sticker.
Really trying to get rid of him.
Fire sale. Everything must go.
Yeah, beyond their sell by date. That would work. Yellow stickers. Okay. England's new kits, Charlie, ahead of the World Cup. I'm not sure if we should be describing them as much maligned, widely panned, or simply dividing opinion. Where are we in the storyline for this so far?
I think dividing opinion. Because I think there's been some sort of counter backlash already.
Obviously, a nice kit, Dave, is in the eye of the beholder. There cannot be a universal objective judgment on the quality of any kit, especially these days. So I'm trying to think, what are the most cliched ways someone describes a kit that they don't like? Number one is, it looks like a training top, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. Like, what makes a kit look like a training top? Is it like sort of too fussy a design? Not statementy enough? What is it?
Maybe a bit busy,
too casual.
Straying a bit too far from the generally accepted traditions. Yeah, and I think the other one is, it's just a template. It's the same. It's the same as Serbia's kit.
That's
amazing, isn't it?
But that's quite advanced. I'd say like the more sort of run-of-the-mill is, like, it looks like it's been designed by a child, or it looks like an explosion in a paint factory or something. If it's one really sort of kind of
that's a bit more
new age one.
Proper football man thing. But yeah, like I think you're right, Charlie. It is quite. The sort of template thing is probably a little bit sort of online kit fanatics.
Yeah.
Like, Puma. Not again. Come on, Puma.
Stop it, Puma. No, literally, do stop it. What about it looks like a market stall knockoff that you could buy on holiday in one of three or four countries only? I think that's the most scathing of all, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, although that said, I was actually talking about this morning. These days, the standard of the knockoffs can actually be quite impressive. Yeah.
Well, and there can be the flip side of that is there can be a sort of retro appeal because it's kind of minimalist, which some people might quite like. If you're talking about quality, I mean, there are some makes that just feel very Sunday League that sort of you can get them for cheap for sort of like, you know, you can order loads.
What's the ultimate Sunday League brand? I think Pro Sport is super. They are the royalty of Sunday League, I'm sure.
What about Ull Sport?
Well, quite goalkeepery though. So they've got that
maybe,
corner
but
of the
they,
market.
But they did also do kits.
I think you're right. Like Sondico.
Well, let's not go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, exactly.
It's definitely Sondico.
When they stray into the outfield areas, then that is quite Sunday League. Imagine England announcing their new kit deal with.
That would be amazing.
With pro sports.
Just more accessible, like open to everyone. Absolutely.
But also, I remember when like Mitre used to do things other than balls. It's like, stay in your lane, lads.
Yeah,
it just feels 100%. Weird.
I completely agree with this. This was only going to go one way, this discussion, where I want to share with you the marketing speak for the New England kit. Now, for once, there's no implied technology. There's no kind of overblown jargon about sweat wicking and all that sort of rubbish, which, to be fair, is actually quite tired now. It feels quite old-fashioned technology, you know, all that sort of stuff. But more about the style. First up, Dave, the angular typeface applied to the name and number and the three lions graphic on the inside back of the shirt is inspired by industrial fonts used by heavy metal rock bands throughout England. Someone sent me this in a screen grab of a tweet, and I thought it was a joke. I looked it up, and there it was in the actual release gump from the FA.
That's really weird. You wouldn't expect. Why have they gone down that route? Heavy metal bands. Like,
is that our thing?
Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Iron Maiden.
Def Leppard.
I mean, I know what they mean, that font. I know what they're getting at.
It's so incongruous.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't imagine.
With football.
Well, and their target demographic, I don't imagine, is sort of massively into heavy metal.
Yeah. It's just a bad font as well. No getting around it. Second one, this is more simple, Charlie, but still made me laugh, was England carries a long tradition of playing in a collared shirt. What a load of shit. That is really scoping the barrel. We invented collars, apparently.
What about our most famous moment ever? We weren't wearing a collar in 1966.
True. True.
Yeah. On either, home or away.
That's a good point.
Long tradition. Playing in a collared shirt.
no stranger to a collared shirt.
Next up, this is from The Athletic's Phil Hay, who gave me permission to read this out verbatim. He says, why the fuck do Blackpool have their landline number on their Twitter account? World class tin pottery, he says. I looked and there it is, 01253 599 745. You don't get the chance to read out a landline number anymore. What a rhythm it has, Charlie. Fair play. Glad it's there.
I love that. That's excellent. What a way to stand out.
But if you are fond of landlines, and people of a certain vintage may well rely on them, and that's absolutely fine. If you want to buy a ticket for Football Clichés Live, why don't you give Earth Hackney a call well in advance of November the 8th on 0207 422 7505, and they may well redirect you somewhere else to buy your ticket. If you fancy coming to watch us at Liberty Hall Theatre in Dublin on November the 16th, it's +353 1858 6354. That's presumably if you're calling from somewhere else. I don't know how to read out an Irish number on its own.
Well, I think Irish people will...
They'll figure it out.
Yeah, they'll know, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're already going around the houses to get this ticket anyway. Yeah. So, but yeah, great, great landline chat here.
No landlines in Manchester.
The New Century Hall in Manchester, this brand spanking new venue that is, doesn't do landlines.
Thinks no. It's above it.
Yeah.
You should do a shift on the phones, Adam.
Telethon.
You could be that, like, you know, like a telethon.
If
you could
we
be
get
that
desperate.
Lucky person that rings up and not only buys a ticket, but buys a ticket from you in person.
That's a great idea.
Phone.
That's a good idea. If things get a little bit dicey with tickets, with a couple of weeks to go, I will give out my mum and dad's landline number and see how it goes. Anyway, couple more questions for the adjudication panel. Benjamin writes in, Charlie, and says, is the definitive name for a group of injuries a spate?
Ooh, could you have a glut? Glut of injuries?
Glut? No, that's goal glut.
Glut of goals, yeah, a spate of injuries. A rash?
Rash of injuries?
No, because
sure.
it's an injury in itself.
A rash of rashes around the club.
Could you have a slew of injuries?
Ooh, I don't like slew. I don't like slew. No, thank you.
I mean, you might, but it's not specific. I'm sure there's another one.
I think it's spates, I mean, for a team.
I think it's
catalogue for a particular player. You can have a catalogue of injuries, but only for one player.
No, I think it is probably a spate.
What about a raft of injuries?
Ooh.
Raft is a raft of withdrawals from an international side. And a raft of substitutions.
Injuries?
Substitutions come in rafts.
Host of new signings, I think.
Host of new signings, yeah. Host of? Yeah, pretty good.
Spate is
happy
good.
With that. Spate's fine, it can't beat spate. Spate it is. Finally, for the adjudication panel, Graham Baines Hall asks, if we're happy with this, from long-serving TV cooking stalwart, Jamie Oliver.
So then take a regular builder's mug, right? And just to the top with basmati rice. This will be more than enough for four people. So put this in and around your tray. Then you want 2 cups of boiling water.
Were you waiting for my sins?
No, I knew it would be an in and around.
Well, thing is, Dave, this one's less about the usage of in and around, which at first I thought was an absolute disgrace on a technical level, but then it actually does make sense because it's in the pan and then around the pan. So you're spreading it around evenly. So if anything, it's quite instructive. But my thoughts about this evolved from that to Jamie Oliver is right smack bang in the middle of the demographic for an in and arounding. He's like the Andy Townsend of cooking, right? So
yeah. Oh, he would get on with Andy Townsend so well.
Mm.
You can imagine them having a pint. I can imagine Andy Townsend being on a cooking sort of Saturday morning cooking show.
Yeah.
Jamie Oliver doing a bit of pretend cooking in a pretend kitchen.
Charlie, what other football pundits can you imagine being on a Sunday morning TV cooking show, just sort of chatting about their lives?
Ooh,
Souness.
I mean,
Cammy.
I think Cammy. Yeah, Cammy. I think Jamie Redknapp, if it was sort of deluxe enough. You know, him being like, yeah, I love a fry-up. It's just the best, isn't it?
Redknapp would do Sunday brunch with Lovejoy, definitely.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Redknapp
right.
would play well, you know. Redknapp's the housewife's favourite.
Yeah,
think.
Yeah, they'd love him on that. You can imagine him in an apron or something, just being like, yeah, I love getting my hands dirty and all of this sort of thing. Which Oliver
would also
appreciate.
Imagine Andy Gray on Ready Steady Cook back in the day. I bet he was on.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Like the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, if someone can dredge that up. Jamie Oliver's also right because technically, even if he doesn't mean around in the pan, people invariably, when they pour rice in, it goes outside. Even if they don't mean to, he is accurate. There's always a little bit of spillage.
Andy Gray was not on Ready Steady Cook, it would seem.
Keezy?
Steak au poivre.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, they don't want to give away their secrets. You'd never be able to make steak au poivre for under £5. Certainly not in Doha.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
But speaking of unlikely moves from individuals to organisations, it's time for the What Are You Doing Here 11. Now, Charlie, we talk a lot about transfers that just sound right. But I'm starting to come around to the idea that the increasing homogeneity of football means that it's kind of like just shooting fish in a barrel, really. It's, lots of players suit lots of clubs. So maybe it's time for us to kind of flip reverse this.
Yeah, I think this is a really worthwhile and important exercise. Now, I think there are a couple of things as well that, for me anyway, you may disagree, but a couple of things this shouldn't be. So I think it shouldn't be players who you later learn played for a team and you're like, oh, really? Rabiot played for Man City, or Mustafi and Eric Dier played for Everton. It's not okay. That because you didn't have any view of it at the time. I think okay. You need to have at the time as well thought, oh, that's a bit weird. And ditto, it must not turn into an all-night Ali Dier at Southampton. It's not weirdest transfers ever.
I'm well on board with that.
Very different thing.
Very on board with that. This is not an online listicle that you have to register to read exactly. For no reason whatsoever. Dave, the way I see this is a kind of Venn diagram of incongruous match of player and club, like genuinely what were they doing there on a real technical level, let alone mm-hmm. anything else. I think it should be forgettable. Like their stints there should be fundamentally forgettable. They didn't pull up any trees. And yep. And just overall, it should, on the most superficial level of all, look wrong. They should look very strange in that kit. And you look at a picture of them going, that looks absurd. How did that ever happen? But I would have to say, despite what Charlie just said, if this does all just slip into a gentle rhythm of us saying, what, player X play for club Y? That's fine with me, actually, because at least we get the second wave, Charlie, of can't believe this. That's kind of all right, right?
Yeah, I think it's slightly less pure, but...
But what you're talking about, Charlie, with Mustafi at Everton, is like that was really obscure, probably didn't play many games. Mm. Like that's, whereas I think, Adam, what you're saying is we may have forgotten that Club X played for Club, the player X played for Club Y, but as soon as you mention it, you're like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, no, that's a very remember. Different thing. Yeah. I think in the examples I've given, some people would still not even be aware that those had happened it wouldn't trigger anything in your mind. You'd just be like, oh really, did he play for them? But yeah, no, if you can remember it, that's a very different thing.
It's getting very close to undermining the rest of this podcast, but let's see how we go. I would definitely rule out sort of slightly random clubs they played for right at the start of their career before they'd even made a senior appearance. That's just the way the youth system works. Don't care, not interested by that. Dave, would you like to care to guess who the most nominated player was for this among our listeners?
I think I might have a couple on my list that could be up there. Do you want me to say it now? Yeah. You know, it's on my list. Yeah. I would imagine that like Thomas Gravesen at Real Madrid is probably quite high.
That was in the top three, certainly. Number one was Julien Faubert to Real Madrid, which I think skirts a little too closely to Charlie's big no-no of everyone knew this happened and it wasn't it a bit weird. And then there's the falling asleep on the bench thing. It's just a bit too, it's too blooper DVD, isn't it? I don't know. I'm a bit worried.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's we've been there. We've revisited his time. Mm. We can do better than that.
We can do better than that. But as always with these sorts of 11s, I'm just trying to recapture, I don't know, the euphoria of three people all shouting Thomas Helveg to Sam Allardyce's Bolton at amazing, the same time, which I think was a real peak point.
That was a great
this
moment.
Podcast. Right. A couple of pointers from our listeners, handy pointers. Alex Harker says, anyone who signed for Derby County in January 2008, open brackets, Hossam Ghali, Laurent Robert. Roughly the sort of ballpark we're aiming for.
Laurent Robert's a great shout.
Mm, unscheduled stops. A very important directive from Mike Hull, 84, Dave, who says, there's been a few shouts for players in the autumn of their career. I feel there is an age slash stage of a career threshold where it's not possible to make a weird move. For example, Neville Southall at Torquay seems odd, but he was knocking 40 at the time. That's absolutely right, especially for goalkeepers. They could rock up anywhere. And so it being the player being completely different to the club isn't enough on its own, I don't think. Especially if they're knocking on.
I'm just crossing off more and more names as we go on here. But yeah, I think goalkeepers
like,
are interesting. Exactly, yeah. Goalkeepers are interesting because I had a few of those types of people on my list. But should we kick off? Shall I kick off?
Yeah, sure. Now we've established the Edgar Davids caveat of players playing for random clubs.
Just really quickly on that, Adam. Yeah, because in the spirit of what are you doing here, if there's an obvious explanation of, well, I'm really old and I can't really get a club, that sort of answers that question. It needs to be that there isn't such an easy explanation.
Yeah, that they had a choice in the matter. Right, let's start in goal then, Dave. I'll kick you off with this from Mark Small, who says, Sander Westerveld made a few appearances for Everton on an emergency loan when we had three other keepers injured and suspended. I mean, this mildly blew my mind, I have to say, but I'm sure you can do better.
Well, I was going to go for one. This is from personal experience, and I don't think it will qualify based on what we've just said. But like, still really good, but on the downslope, David Seaman playing for Manchester City. Was a weird one for me. I saw him play at Highbury for Man City, and he got a guard of honour, actually. And it was the game where Henri just smashed one in from like 30 yards. And you sort of can lump Schmeichel in as well, when Schmeichel had his sort of post. He played for City as well, right?
Yeah.
After Man United. I think it's not quite as. It's a bit weirder than, like you were saying, Neville Southall plumbing the depths of the Football League, just in desperately trying to rack up another career appearance.
Oh, I think there's a layer of curiosity to them staying at the top and then signing for someone else. But interesting, you mentioned Peter Schmeichel there. Charlie, list the clubs that Peter Schmeichel played for post-Manchester United.
Well, he went to Sporting, didn't he?
Yeah.
First of all. That's quite weird.
Two seasons.
Was it that long? Yeah. And then he went to Villa and then City, I think.
Schmeichel at Lisbon seems very strange.
Yeah. But that in a way is less... I know what Dave means. The going to City from... Like, that move felt a year too early. You'd think he would have moved somewhere... Like, either gone abroad to try that or stayed at a slightly higher level rather than going straight down to Man City.
Other slightly strange parallel goalkeeping moves. Pepe Reina to Bayern Munich in 2014.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Rustu Rekber to Barcelona.
Yes. That was in that period where Davids went to Barca, wasn't it? They were kind of in between good times. I mean, Davids obviously lifted them, but they weren't great, I seem to remember, in that period when Rustu went there.
The Rustu Rekber shout was gathered in the final 3 minutes before we recorded, when I was simply typing in random big-ish club names into Google and all transfers, and then finding the transfer mark page for every transfer they've ever made, scrolling down and just seeing gold after gold after gold. Very much a variation on the men just like sitting around listing players' names phenomenon, but all by myself on my computer. But fun nonetheless. I also offer you, Charlie, Victor Valdez at Middlesbrough.
That's yes. A good one. Yes, that is a good one.
Because that's a really good contrast from... Valdez was the goalkeeper for what many people would say the best club team of all time.
Yep.
And then rocks up at a relatively unsuccessful, unglamorous time in Middlesbrough's history. It's not like they had loads of other superstars at the time.
It wasn't even a Fabio Rochenbach situation. No. They literally were nothing.
I mean, even his spell at United was quite weird.
Yeah. Yes.
Like,
yeah.
That feels really sort of forgettable.
So if it was weird that he went to United, it must be 10 times weirder that he went to Borough and more incongruous. Should we have Victor Valdez? Who's happy with that?
I think it's a really good chat. There's some very low-key ones I had from ages ago. Do you remember Peggy Arfexad, however you pronounce that? Who I thought was very much the Leicester, Mr. Leicester backup. Anyway, that he went to Liverpool always seemed very odd to me. Quite forgettable one. Mark Bosnich at Chelsea.
Oh, yeah, they also had Magnus Hedman.
Yeah, that's not.
They pulled him basically out of retirement, which I think is an extra layer of this. Yeah,
and they had Paul Jones, didn't they, on an emergency loan? Which obviously, the explanation is that it was an emergency loan when they were missing something like three keepers, and he went there for a few games.
Peggy Arfaxad,
Mark Poom at Arsenal.
Yeah,
Arsenal. Yeah.
On Peggy Arfaxad, this is his late career trajectory: Leicester, Liverpool, Stockport on loan, Coventry, Notts County on loan, Marseille.
Wow, that is not. I really thought that was an Al Ali, going to be an Al Ali situation at the end.
He was very Al Ali, but not quite. Anyway, Victor Valdez in goal for us, I think.
Yeah, it's Valdez. Yeah.
Right, Dave, give me some defenders. I was quite light on defenders. At first, I only had Alvaro Arbeloa at West Ham, which the more I read, the more I came to terms with. So I'm happy to disregard it completely.
I was quite light on fullbacks, but defenders. I see what you think of this. I think this could go either way. But I think, is Sol Campbell at Notts County? Is that too wacky?
It was too wacky given their weird chapter of their history. But the fact that he went on to play for Newcastle and Arsenal makes it very strange.
He had one game against Morecambe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a weird one.
It is a weird one, isn't it? It pretty much is the epitome of what are you doing here? So
yeah,
I'm relatively happy with that.
He was playing against like the Nottingham Uni first team and things against students, and it was like, what is? I mean, this is like
was
an
he?
He played. They played a friendly. Notts County played the Uni first team just after he joined there, and yeah, people were like, we're playing against Sol Campbell. This is totally mad. So I think that is quite a good shout. I should say as well, I think in doing this, there is quite a fine line, isn't there? Like with Arbeloa, between this is insane and this does actually feel quite right.
So he is quite West Hammy, so I mean it's actually absolutely fine.
I mean, I'm not a defender. I was continuing the Arsenal Tottenham crossing the divide theme. I always found Gallas's time at Spurs quite weird because he was so known for the Chelsea Arsenal thing. And then he went to Spurs. I don't really feel like that feels like that should be a massive thing. I don't feel like anyone was especially bothered either way.
Well, this is interesting. That's an interesting example to raise because some of this team could be made up of players who simply play for loads of big clubs. And just by, I don't know, the sheer force of physics, one of those big clubs will be the one that feels weird. Take, for example, the ultimate example of a deluxe journeyman, which would be Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Ooh.
Okay. Who played for every conceivable massive club, maybe except for Real Madrid. But his time at Inter, whilst not insignificant, if you see pictures of him in an Inter kit, you think, well, that's just weird. I associate him more with the other clubs. So it's just the I don't know, the market forces of it.
But the Spurs had a little phase of that, right, where they also had Adebayor for a bit. They had Idagard Johnson.
Late
sort of career Idagard Johnson. Players that have played for other big clubs, players that have played for other big London clubs in particular. So I feel like Gallas is sort of in that bracket, just doing the rounds.
Yeah, definitely. Doing the rounds is definitely part of this. How about this from Ben Barker, Charlie? The Reading ownership decided the best chance Nigel Adkins had of bouncing back from relegation from the Prem in 2013 was by signing once wonderkid perennial bad boy Royston Drenter from Alania Vladikavkaz, now dissolved. It went precisely as you'd imagine. Now, I do remember this, and it was absurd, and I'm really happy with having Royston Drenter in this team.
Yes, even his time at Everton, which came a bit before then, felt a little odd. Maybe made a bit more sense. Yeah, Royston Drenter's a great shout. I mean, another on the centre-back is Stephen Colker's very odd spell at Liverpool.
Yeah.
Especially as he went there on loan, and barely played. And I think he was chucked on as a striker.
That's right.
All very weird. And again, if you saw him in a Liverpool shirt, I'm going to Google it now. I just think it would look very, very odd.
I was going to chuck in, and I think this category will come up again, particularly on my side of things. But Rio Ferdinand at QPR never sat well with me.
Mm.
Because it's just, there was too many touch points that were at odds with it. Right. You know, you were very used to him being, you know, supreme defender for Manchester United. Also the Leeds thing. But obviously, like, so associated with West Ham. And then also, I think the fact that Anton Ferdinand was notably at QPR, sort of, it's like, that's don't steal your brother's thunder. Anton, that QPR is for Anton. You know, give him a chance.
I see.
And it didn't work, and it didn't look right for me.
The QPR thing is tricky because any player that, you know, we aren't sure played for QPR immediately becomes a whole new universe of possibilities, doesn't it, Charlie? So QPR are a dangerous one for this.
Totally. I was just going to say QPR is really hard because they were, by their nature, what are you doing here? Because they were just signing lots of really random players. But I think Ferdinand is a really good shout there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think Ferdinand is a good shout because he did feel a bit of a sort of premium quality Rolls Royce kind of player. To then, like, yes, there was a randomness, but there was also a bit of a pattern. And I think they were a rung below Rio Ferdinand. You know, a lot of their players, you're like, fading star, yeah, but you're sort of...
like buying a Rolls Royce in Auto Trader magazine.
Exactly. But they had money. That's, I mean, they had theoretical money at the time. So
they did, but they didn't have a huge amount of sort of clout, or they weren't a huge draw.
Mm. I'm happy with Kolka. I won't have Ferdinand because I still think there's a thread of QPR-ishness about him, which just sees it through. I'll go around the continent for you briefly. Walter Samuel had a season at Real Madrid in 2004. Mm. Frank de Boer went to Galatasaray in 2003. Really? Who knows any of this? But I do like this. Back to the Medeski Stadium with Matt Williams. He says, a double for you. In 2005, Reading had both Martin Keown and Les Ferdinand join in the twilight of their careers for a very forgettable period. Keown's debut came as a sub, replacing Ferdinand towards the end of a turgid 0-0 home draw with Plymouth. What were either doing there?
That's a great... I mean, Keown... I think Keown went to Leicester, didn't he?
And Ferdinand before then. Leicester.
And Ferdinand was at Leicester, yeah. But Ferdinand was at Leicester in the Premier League, at least.
Yeah.
Or at least he was in that season where they got relegated. Keown,
I quite like the idea of Martin Keown playing for anybody post-Arsenal.
Yeah.
As being weird.
Definitely is.
You're going to have Sol Campbell and Martin Keown as our centre-backs.
Fine. Sol Campbell it is. It's a weird back four of Royston Drenthe, Stephen Coulter, Martin Keown and Sol Campbell, but what heft it has. Pretty happy with that.
We could balance it out. If we want to get rid of one of the centre-backs and have a proper two full-backs. Is Paul Konchesky, some of his moves were a bit weird, weren't they? Was he at Spurs for a bit?
He was, and I still... Konchesky and Spurs is one of these ones I've so often in my head been like, did that happen? Did that not happen? It feels both so right and so wrong.
And the other thing with Paul Konchesky is, in a way, he sort of embodies this. Because you know when suddenly he had hair?
Yeah, yeah. When he was in Liverpool, like, didn't he suddenly have hair?
What is that
he's
doing
got hair
there?
Again now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when Skirtle got hair.
Konchesky very much at the core of the did they play for QPR or not. Are either of you sure?
What, did Konchesky? He didn't. He didn't play for QPR.
He bloody did.
Did he?
He did.
Oh, my
season
God.
On loan. You would. Is this the second time you've been done by who played for QPR?
No, that was what got me through last time.
Oh,
night.
Right.
That saved me. Late on his career. What's also funny about the Spurs run is that he joined on a month loan, then it got extended for another month, and then for another couple of months.
Hmm.
It's a weird one.
I think he's just Spursy enough. Here. Just Spursy enough, I think.
What about Julian Dix at Liverpool?
Yeah, that is weird. That is weird.
That is weird.
Let's get him in instead of Keown or Campbell.
Instead of Keown, I think.
I think Keown, yeah.
Fine.
But is that weird as well, though? And I'm just speaking for myself here, but because it was slightly before I really got into football, and so he was always, from when I got into football, he was like Mr. West Ham.
Yeah.
Would that have seemed as weird at the time?
I don't know.
Interestingly, and I do think this adds to it, it was a hair-growing situation. Well, he did a Konchesky. He grew his hair at Liverpool and had, very briefly, like a really sort of a little thin goatee as well. So it's almost like he was trying to disguise himself as not Julian Dix, which I
and
think
it was
is,
between
think
it was between spells, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But do you remember him, Adam, at Liverpool? Were you following football by then?
I would have been, probably not old enough to kind of register it as absolutely absurd. But looking back, it is absurd. He scored one screamer for them, and it yeah the whole thing. I mean, Liverpool obviously in their shambles phase.
Yeah.
Post being good. And yeah, I'm happy with that. Okay, good back four: Royston Drenthe, Stephen Cocker, Julian Dix, Sol Campbell. Two left backs, but who's counting? Right, let's move into midfield now, please. And we've established that Julian Faubert to Real Madrid is not going to be in this team. Sorry, Baseman 93. Sorry, James Arrowsmith. Sorry, Dave Walker. It's not happening. but I will offer you this, Dave. Stephen Deacon says Nobby Solano and JJ Okocha turning out for Hull.
Yeah.
Don't remember Solano at Hull.
Was that the Phil Brown connection?
Must have been.
Mm.
Yeah. Sort of Bolton light. Not the same.
And from the northeast, so he'd have got Solano.
Yes.
I have no recollection of Solano at Hull.
Yeah, I have to say Solano at Hull's very strange. Charlie George Hall, this might be up your street. Robert Pires to Villa.
Yeah.
Back to the place where he was applauded by Andy Gray.
Yes, yeah.
That's why he went
every
there.
Game. He's so he's so good at Villa Park. He understands the pitch dimensions really, really well. I mean, there were a few. I saw someone suggested similar that Alex Sleb signing for a sort of gritty Birmingham City team. Yeah. And I think actually we did a long read on that Birmingham team because they won the League Cup and then got relegated. And I think there was quite a lot of genuine. In fact, I remember speaking to Stephen Carr, the former Spurs player, and adding in some questions about that Birmingham team. And the sense was about Alex Sleb, what are you doing here? Like, this is not a good marriage.
I do like this. I do like Alex Sleb to Birmingham because it's forgettable. Footballistically, on a very surface level, it looks like a wrong fit. And also, Dave, it fits with this kind of transfer subgenre that has always fascinated me, which is players coming over here to big clubs, it not quite working out, and then either deciding to go back to Europe or just sort of swim around in the, the second tier clubs of English football. Pogrebniak just sort of playing for Reading or something like that. And just thinking, is this how you thought it would turn out? Like, did you ever picture yourself playing for Birmingham, Alex Sleb? Dave, you can also have Gyorgy Kinkladze to Boca Juniors on loan in 1994. That I'm only including this not because it's... Ooh. I mean, it is weird, but it's about the most romantic transfer that lots of people don't know about I can possibly think of.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that before, ever.
It was more of a trial. He didn't really play for them either.
Right.
I mean, there's no pictures of it, except for one picture of him sat on a ball at training. So he didn't play for them, which I think should rule him out, really.
Okay, yeah, it should do.
Wikipedia is a liar. Didn't play three games for Boca Juniors. Charlie, we could also have Kevin Prince-Boateng to Barcelona.
Yes.
That's weird.
Yeah.
And wrong.
That was weird.
That was quite... Was that sort of quite a while after he was decent?
I have no grasp about when or if Kevin Prince-Boateng was actually good. No comprehension.
Around the
baffling
time
career.
I do know exactly what you mean. No, it was late. It was late he was at Barca.
Yeah.
Well beyond. It was like, I mean, they had Paulinho, who was quite good, but obviously to English fans is sort of Tottenham flop. But they had quite a few of those type players. I mean, Kinkladze at Derby always felt a little bit weird, just because he was so synonymous with City.
Where do we stand on Thomas Gravesen to Real Madrid?
Well, I think, is it too contrary to not to have neither him nor Faubert? Or do we think we're just going to go the whole hog
too obvious? Gravesen is weirder than Faubert, I think. Gravesen doesn't fit in with... At least Faubert, there was an element of potentially exciting attacking player on his maybe one or two days that he might have. But Gravesen, the baldness, the Scandinavianness...
Here we go.
The tough tacklingness from Everton under David Moyes... to Real Madrid, who at
during
the time
the Galactico's
was still
era,
Galactico's
yeah.
era.
It was weird.
Okay,
I think it's the best one.
Whilst noting your decision that bald people can't play for Real Madrid. The Athletic did once publish an article simply saying, why did Real Madrid sign Thomas Gravesen from Everton? Which I think the incredulity of which... I mean, it was a big shout amongst our listeners, and time is ticking on, so I will have Thomas Gravesen.
It is good. It's an island in the sea of... I mean, he went from Hamburg to Everton to Real Madrid to Celtic, then Everton on loan. I mean, it's a real outlier in that career.
There's also a nice little wrinkle to it, because there's just enough about him to go, but actually, much better footballer than he can.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much about it that you can imagine. Someone will message us that within seconds of this podcast being published. And that's fine. That's fine. It's all about interpretation. All about interpretation.
I've got two for your consideration here. Fairly high profile, but to me, neither of them felt right. And that was Patrick Vieira and Frank Lampard playing for Manchester City.
Lampard to City got a huge number of shouts amongst our listeners. I didn't think it felt particularly odd to me, but then I suppose it was.
It was, and it was, and I think it is. I don't know if it's we should avoid or we should include one of those sort of 3-month loan things. I know that actually got extended, but do you remember like when Beckham... like when he went to PSG,
the MLS
and Milan, the sort of MLS window that meant you had these weird signings. I guess that maybe we shouldn't, because there is that obvious explanation. But that was an interesting subculture.
But it does open so many possibilities up. That's the thing. It does. What about Denis Suarez on loan to Arsenal from Barcelona?
That was weird.
That was weird.
But the problem is no one knows who Denis Suarez is.
Fine.
Yeah, you're. I
Do
mean,
they? Like, yeah, is he good?
On a nut, also, you know, with a fair wind, he was a kind of technical, creative midfielder.
He might but I think if he wasn't called Suarez, well. If he was called Dennis something else.
Go on.
But if he wasn't called, I think the Suarez is, it just sort of make, because we associate subconsciously with Luis Suarez, it's like a, he was just a generic sort of all right midfielder, right?
Yeah, also, I think this is, that's too, there's too much of an outcome bias with that. The fact he was there wasn't that weird. Like, but a technical Barcelona midfielder on loan at Arsenal, you're not like, what? Who would have thought Arsenal would sign a tricky technical attacking mid? It's just the fact it worked. He was really bad, or it worked out really badly.
I quite like this supporting material from James Dadge about this. He said Suarez on loan to Arsenal from Barcelona was during that very panicky transfer era for Arsenal, where it felt like the club were just saying to the fans, "Oh, look, a Barcelona player on loan. Ooh." Well, I will always include someone who writes "ooh" in a quote. By the way,
exactly. But I think that's notice. It. It made there was a degree. It made sense. It just was really bad.
Here's a little Transworld Sports style skip through the continents. Gaethje Mendieta to Barcelona on loan in 2002. As was Demetrio Albertini. What are you doing there? What about Guti at Besiktas?
Is that weird?
Maybe not.
I think Albertini's the weirdest one of those.
Yeah,
three.
That's weird. And I remember even thinking at the time that felt odd, just because you never really got at that time those sort of Italian players going to Spain.
That's
they all
the weird
stayed
thing.
In Italy.
Yeah, really incongruous. I can't imagine him in that shirt. At all.
No.
But that probably goes for a lot of Serie A players, especially Italians, like moving abroad. Just feels very odd.
And a bit like in sort of in reverse, like Roberto Carlos having a season at Inter.
Yes. Yeah.
But we've got left backs. We've already got two left backs.
But Inter, generally, you mentioned out of the Zlatan at Inter, that Inter period where Juve and Milan were in real trouble and had to sell their players, and loads, you had a lot of weird players ending up at Inter. I mean, you mentioned Vieira at City. Vieira at Inter always felt a bit like, really? Like, what? You're just there purely sort of by default because you've got to leave Juve.
On that point, the incredibly rational mind of Michael Cox has a theory about this, about why transfers like that feel so weird. And it is a really superficial thing. It's because we became accustomed to Patrick Vieira striding around in the red of Arsenal. And as soon as he signs for a team who play in blue, the most diametrically opposed colours in football, then it feels immediately weird. And I think there's a massive truth to that. I realise, it undermines the entire podcast, but I do think it's true.
I agree. And I think that's why, for me, Vieira at City feels a little bit weirder than Lampard at City.
The blueness, the red and blueness.
To narrow this down, then, I'm going to offer you a choice between these. Patrick Vieira at Manchester City or Robert Pires at Aston Villa?
Can I just chuck your name in as well? Really quickly. Scott Sinclair at Man City.
Yeah. Midfielder?
Sort of wideman.
I'm not having him in our three-man engine room, no.
Okay, we're going with three-man engine.
Stick to the choices.
But then, well, then Pires isn't an engine.
Yeah.
Oh, for God's sake.
Is he?
No, absolutely not.
Would you have him in a front three?
Wide on the left?
Depends what for. Are we definitely going... Because we could see what strikers we end up with, and then we can reverse fit it. We don't want to pick the formation until we know what we're dealing with here.
Fine. I'm putting...
Although, actually, to be honest, though, sort of in keeping in the spirit of the whole pod, if we put Robert Pires in the... What are you
what
doing,
are you
in,
doing
the
in the engine
three?
His teammates turning to him.
I'll put both Pires and Vieira in for now, and let's see what we have up front.
We've got the spine of the Invincibles.
Yeah, we've got the Invincibles.
Works for me. They were so attached to that team, maybe that's why it is. Joe Blundell for our forward line, Dave... gives us a little glimpse into the murky transfer world of Serie A. He says, what was the point in Felipe Caicedo, once at Manchester City, of course, going on loan to Inter in January last season? Three sub-appearances totalling 20 minutes, zero goals, while his parent club got relegated before he left on a free to play in Saudi Arabia. Utter waste of time for everyone involved. He was also 33.
And that happened last season?
Yeah. What the hell is going on there? But I also think there's probably some sort of weird little...
We probably shouldn't
see situation.
We shouldn't ask. Yeah, we probably shouldn't scratch too deep below the surface.
I don't want this. I'm not saying I want this 11 to be pure, Charlie, but I don't want any sort of accountancy tricks going on here.
No,
rubbish, isn't it? A rubbish reason for a transfer.
Yeah.
I can also offer you Roberto Mancini to Leicester from Jamie Thorpe. James Stewart says Ian Rush to Newcastle or Leeds, actually, for that matter.
Yeah.
I had Rush down. I actually forgot that he played for Lee. I had Newcastle. I had Rush to Newcastle. Because I always think the fact that Rush and Barnes are in the Liverpool 4-3 game and it's Rush, Barnes, still John Barnes, but then they both go and play for Newcastle after that season is mad.
It's true.
Yeah, I remember Rushy as well at that time. Me getting into football coincided almost exactly with his decline, and he just seemed like the oldest man in the world. I was like,
"You're suggesting you were responsible for it? I can't handle it. Equishen's watching.
Yeah,
he'll remember this as well.
The pressure of it got too much, but he just seemed so old and slow and past it. I was kind of amazed, and I'd never seen him be good. And then when he pitched up at Leeds and he didn't score for like the first 20 games or something.
I think that's also an interesting part of this. Players who epitomised a certain era of football, hanging on and then playing in another era that was something completely different. So if you take a player who was at their peak in the mid-1980s, for better or worse, that came with it, and then the kind of burgeoning Premier League era, it does feel wrong. They're playing with a different ball. What are you playing with that ball for?
Gordon Strachan playing at 40.
Yes. Ian Rush, that is it. It does not feel like a Premier League player at all. Like, he's just such a different era.
Yeah. Do like this.
Is it to a slightly more recent example, like Michael Owen at Stoke?
Yeah.
I
mean, Hargreaves played all the boxes.
Barely played, didn't he?
Yeah, he barely played.
Did he play midfield for Stoke? Have we had this conversation before? I think we have.
Hargreaves pitching up at City. Did he ever play for them, or was that just like
He did play for them, but it was when he was like coming back for one game at a time.
Yeah. That is weird. That is really strange.
45 minute spells here and there.
He played one game. He literally played, or once in the league for them anyway.
That's incredible. Jake Parks says Daniel Sturridge on loan at West Brom in 2018. How about Idigar Johnson on loan at Spurs, which we mentioned before? That feels weird.
He played for Stoke as well.
And Barcelona.
Fulham. Yeah.
And Fulham.
Yeah.
Fulham.
Take your pick with Idigar Johnson.
Yeah.
But then I think that slightly undermines it, because if you become a journeyman,
you're going to end up at random clubs, right?
It's a bit, exactly.
Fine.
I had one, Andy Booth at Tottenham.
Yeah.
It is a good show.
I once wrote a piece on that for The Athletic. On disastrous striker signings, him and Raziak and a couple of others. He looks back on the time fondly there, you're interested to know.
But I think what adds to that story is the fact that there was a definite hint of, from Booth's side, of, I can't believe this is happening. What on earth?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
which a bit I think like is Ricky Lambert at Liverpool.
Yeah, I do like that.
Without the romance.
Yes.
So I was just going to say one that I found weird at the time, and I still think it's quite weird. At the end of the 90s, Arsenal were all about signing young, exciting, often French players. And then completely seemed to go against that in the summer of 99, when as part of the Anelka leaving deal, they brought in Davor Šuker.
Yeah.
Who was, you know, they just didn't make those sort of signings. He'd been the World Cup Golden Boot winner the year before. He was pretty old at that time. It just felt like a really odd one. They also signed Thierry Henry that summer, who was like the sort of prototypical Arsenal signing. That Šuker at Arsenal and then West Ham. He just never seemed like a Premier League player.
I see what you mean. But but at least there's an element of class to Šuker.
Yeah, maybe.
That Arsenal had.
I'd say the West Ham move is weirder. Like, yeah,
maybe.
Taking one more step into English football is a bit weird. But if anything, it's kind of a move ahead of its time, because all the big clubs are doing that now. Can we get in some guaranteed goals that are, like, you know, for free?
Yeah, he's actually a forerunner. Kind of situation. Or like Falcao, Cavani. He's that sort of signing, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Here's some other ones. Okay, Gawim says, Andy Cole at Sunderland, to which I add, Dwight York at Birmingham. What are both of you doing at both of those places?
Wow.
And didn't they both play for the reverse as well? York definitely played for Sunderland.
Heskey played for Birmingham. Andy Cole did play for
Birmingham. Yes, he did, yeah.
Yeah. But I think similar to Good Johnson, I mean, Cole especially, played for so many clubs after Man United.
The long tail of Andy Cole's career is absolutely absurd. Blackburn, Fulham, Man City, Portsmouth, Birmingham loan, Sunderland, Burnley loan. Burnley? Nottingham Forest. Incredible.
Yeah.
What a quiz question that is.
His star burned so brightly, didn't it? And then that is, you're right, that is a long old... I mean, really, from when he left United, that was it, really.
Yeah. Should we just throw in Andy Cole as just a general choice and you can pick the club? I'm happy with this.
Well, even though he started at Arsenal, a lot of people would find that weird.
Yes, agreed.
Definitely. I think this man has probably been in at least one of our prior 11s, if not more, not several. But Robbie Keane to Inter Milan is a particular kind of example of this. Like, it's big, massive European super club buying a, you know, young hopeful who's had half a good season for a provincial English club.
Yeah. If only they'd signed Gary Breen, because that was guaranteed shoo-in for this one.
Mm.
Yeah, but that is weirder. But but it's sort of like one of those, it's kind of like one of those scenarios that gets talked about sometimes. Oh, I could have signed for such and such.
Yeah.
But it did happen.
Thing is with Robbie Keane, he had so many clubs and he can be at the sort of the centre of some sort of web for this, because Richard writes in and says, I can't believe no one has said Robbie Keane at Benitez is Liverpool yet, which does feel weird. And do you remember Gareth Barry almost joining Liverpool?
Yep.
So in my head, he did play for them.
Yeah, they got rid of Mascherano to try and bring him in.
Yeah.
Right? I think that was that whole
situation. No, they were trying to get rid of Xabi Alonso, but they couldn't. They couldn't quite make it work. So they were like, oh, I guess we'll have to hold on to Xabi Alonso. And then that was the season they finished second. It was bizarre. They were desperate to get Gareth Barry.
So Robbie Keane played for Liverpool, bafflingly. Gareth Barry didn't play for Liverpool, bafflingly. And Robbie Keane didn't play, bafflingly, for Manchester City. So it all comes together. I'm losing track of our methodology by the second here, but I do like the Robbie Keane being at the centre of this universe. I'll finish with two names and then I'll let you have a crack. Mido. Where did you know where Mido finished his career?
He's on my list. Charlie.
Go on.
Barnsley.
Wow.
Mido at Barnsley.
That is weird.
I will also
he jumped, I mean, because he jumped around.
Yeah.
He was abroad a lot, wasn't he?
Yeah. Stephen Fletcher. On loan at Marseille. So
when was that?
On loan from Sunderland, so I'm going to say...
2013 or something?
Yeah.
Something like that. So the situation is this. We've got Ian Rush and Andy Cole up front. We either want one more striker, in which case we have to remove either Pires or Vieira. So
I think we should.
4-4-2. Do we want to switch to 4-3-3?
I don't think we want Pires and Vieira, ideally.
Okay, let's take Pires out. And that means we have room for one more striker, and that will be I'm going to throw all the names back at you, and you can pluck one out of the air. Stephen Fletcher at Marseille, Mido at Barnsley, Andy Cole at Sunderland, Dwight York at Birmingham, Robbie Keane at Liverpool or Inter, Idrissa Johnson at Spurs, Roberto Mancini at Leicester, or Felipe Caicedo at Inter.
I like the idea of having Cole, yeah, and then you insert one of many, many clubs.
Mido at Barnsley feels quite underwhelming to me. It might as well have not happened.
Yeah, I think we should have Ian Rush in there.
He's in there, don't you worry.
Okay. I think Mido fails the, oh yeah, I remember that test. Because none of us can remember it.
None of us knew it happened in the first place, yeah, agreed. Which might not be the case for everybody, I understand that.
Sure. We can only play what's in front of us.
Right, we need a third striker, Dave. Who's it going to be?
I am going to go for my vote. Apologies to Andy Booth, who I did like, and he literally was the first name on my team sheet when I sat down to do this. But it's just a little bit too obscure. Not enough people really know who Andy Booth was or whatever.
Sure.
So I'm going to go for Robbie Keane at Inter.
Agreed. Happy with that. And he's got the Liverpool backup as well for being weird. And he played for Celtic, also weird. Villa or West Ham, can't remember. Can never. It's been on the Football Clichés quiz and I still can't remember. But yeah, Robbie Keane, what a perfect inclusion he is. Should we run through our little team? Not that it really matters, really, but Victor Valdes in goal, a back four of Royston Drenthe, Stephen Colker, an inverted Julian Dix and Sol Campbell, a midfield engine room of Alex Klebb, Thomas Gravesen, Patrick Vieira, and a forward line of Ian Rush at Newcastle, Andy Cole anywhere, and Robbie Keane. Okay. I mean, collectively, it means absolutely nothing, doesn't it? It doesn't scream anything, this team, does it?
There are some elements that I really love, especially the idea of telling Julian Dix you're playing as an inverted fullback, sort of conveying that message to him, just cutting onto that hammer of your left foot. Yeah. Kleb in the engine room. It's a great 11.
All right, fantastic stuff. Well, thanks both for trawling through a very complicated transfer web for us. Cheers, Dave, on your 80th appearance.
And one to remember.
Yeah. Thanks to you, Charlie, who is among a raft of withdrawals for the Athletic's Wednesday night clash against Sky Sports away.
I know. Tricky trip. Literally the day my baby is due, and it felt a little bit
risky. I really hope, Charlie, that your son or daughter gets born this evening as we record, and you will forever know that the day that they were born, earlier that day, you sat here and talked about the "what are you doing here" 11.
It's a shameful existence, it really.
They'll be so proud to know.
Baby Thomas Gravesen Eccleshare.
Yeah.
Nice. Good that you chose him, the bald guy. Nice. Anyway, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back on Monday. See you then.
The Athletic.